Krishnesadamo Bhagate Damaganadibi Saha Kalana Sadashomesha Parano Kodinurita Nalayana Namaskritcha Naram Chaivam Narottama Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudirayat Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
So we are reading from the 7th canto, chapter 13, text 23, correct? All right, very good. Tatapi brumahi prashnam tava rajan yata shrutam sambhasaniyo hi bhavan atmana shurim ichata tatapi brumahi prashnam Kavarajan yatashrutam Sabasaniyo hi bhavan Atmana shurimichata Tatapi brumahi prashnam Kavarajan yatashrutam Sabasaniyo hi bhavan Atmana shurimichata Tatapi brumahi prashnam Tavarajan yatashrutam Sambhasaniyo hi bhavan Atmana shurimichata
questions. Tava, your Rajan, O King, Yatashrutam, as I have learned by hearing, excuse me, from the authorities, Sambhasaniya, fit for being addressed. He, indeed, Bhavan, you, Atmana of the self, shrutim, purification, ichata, by one who desires. My dear king, although you know everything, you have posed some questions which I shall try to answer according to what I have learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Also, you say, my dear King, although you know everything, you've posed some questions, which I shall try to answer according to what I've learned by hearing from authorities. I cannot remain silent in this regard, for a personality like you is just fit to be spoken to by one who desires self-purification. Prabhupada's purport. A saintly person does not wish to speak to anyone and everyone, and he is therefore grave and silent. Generally, a common man does not need to be advised. Unless one is prepared to take instruction, it is said that a saintly person should not address him. Although sometimes, because of great kindness, a saintly person speaks to ordinary men. As for Prahlad Maharaj, however, since he was not a common, ordinary man, whatever questions he posed would have to be answered even by a great and exalted personality. Therefore, the saintly Brahmin did not remain silent, but began to answer. These answers, however, were not concocted by him. It is indicated by the word yatashrutam, meaning, as I have heard from authorities. In the parampara system, when the questions are bona fide, the answers are bona fide. No one should attempt to create or manufacture answers. One must refer to the shastras and give answers according to Vedic understanding. The words yatashrutam refer to Vedic knowledge. The Vedas are known as shruti because the knowledge is received from authorities. The statement of the Vedas are known as shruti pramana. One should quote evidence from shruti, the Vedas or Vedic literature, and then one's statements will be correct. Otherwise, one's words will proceed from mental concoction. Om agena timarandasya gena gena salakaya jakshu shunmilitan gena tazadeshi gurave namaha. Hold on here.
Hey, what is this?
We seem to have... All right. So yesterday we had a very beautiful Srimad Bhagavatam. Is beautiful. And the class yesterday by Rome Padmaj was very beautiful. And he also embodied the mood of the verse that Tushyanti cha ramanti cha, devotees sit together and they relish. So you could tell that Rome Padmaj, he was relishing very much speaking about Bhagavatam. Now, there is the verse in the Bhagavatam that a bird flies in the sky according to its ability. So I know what's expected of me. I will try my best to tell some Prabhupada stories and say something in line with the purport. But I'll fly as high in the sky as I can by your mercy. The Prabhupada said that here we have, even though he knew the subject matter, he was asking questions. The Prabhupada said we should not be dull-headed. I'm just trying to think of what stories not to tell. So the Prabhupada said that Krishna consciousness is like a jewel. You know, a faceted jewel. You turn it catches the light in different ways. Someone was saying the other day they went into, maybe it was Prahlad Nandamarsh, I forget. Somebody was saying they went into Prabhupada's room and he was reading Bhagavad Gita. You know, he wrote Bhagavad Gita, who knows how many times he was quoting Bhagavad Gita, but Prabhupada himself was personally relishing reading Bhagavad Gita. So every time you open it, every time you look at our philosophy from a different way, like when you have a jewel, like these crystals here, you move different ways, they catch the light, and different colors are refracted. So the Bhagavatam is unlimited, and it refracts the light in different ways. And I was thinking of a few of Prabhupada would answer things, questions different ways you could look at the same question with a different answer. So people were always asking Prabhupada, oh, can you see Krishna? And Prabhupada would answer in different ways. Sometimes he would say, you know, and what difference does that make to you? whether I can see Krishna. Or the question is, can you see Krishna? He would answer in different ways. So one time, Prabhupada was in London at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Temple room is packed. Prabhupada's here. Deities are here. Man stands up in the middle and says, can you see Krishna? So remember, Prabhupada's here. Deities are here. Man stands up in the middle. Can you see Krishna? Prabhupada said, yes, but you're standing in the way. Sit down. Very blissful answer. I wasn't there for that one, but this one I was there. A man said, can you see Krishna? Prabhupada said, that's not the question. The question is, why can't you see Krishna? Prabhupada said, the mystic power of Krishna is all around us. We simply need to have the eyes to see. So one who has the eyes to see, Krishna's mystic power is all around us. Prabhupada gave an example. Prabhupada said, suppose I can float this glass of water. You're all sitting here. Whatever else I may say, whatever else happens, if I went, om, and this glass of floated up. Some of you might even think, some of our guests, oh, he must be Bhagavan. You know? So it appears to be a very, and frankly, I mean, if Prahlad Nanda Maharaj or Bhakti Bhushan Maharaj, they were able to float a bottle of water, I'd be pretty impressed. I have to tell you, I'd be impressed. But Prabhupada pointed out, what about the person, monsoon season has just ended, right? I don't know if you remember Sataputta Prabhu. Sataputta is one of the heroes of our society, one of the founding members of the Bhaktivedanta Institute. A genius, certified genius. So it rained one day in San Diego. He and I were staying in San Diego at the time. And, you know, raining in San Diego is like a big deal. And it rained, I think it was a quarter of an inch. I mean, a quarter of an inch? They don't even register that in India. I mean, a quarter of an inch is pathetic. Anyway, it rained a quarter of an inch. Sataputta Prabhu calculated it. He figured out, okay, and it rained all over Southern California, but he thought, let's be conservative. So he found out what is the square mile of San Diego County. They must be different counties or whatever you call it, you know, provinces or whatever. So he found out the size of San Diego County. Then he calculated the surface area. Then he figured to cover that surface area, a quarter of an inch, how much water that would be. And it was billions, with a B, billions of tons. Okay? And you know what it was billion. You can calculate this way. There is a fixed amount, the weight of a gallon of water, 8 pounds, 9 pounds, whatever it is. Even taking whatever the conservative number is, if you weigh that quarter of an inch of rain, that it rained all over Southern California, but just taking a small section, it's billions and billions of tons of water. And Krishna's just floating it in the sky. And he's distributing it wherever he wants. First off, he's the source. Prabhupada, the sun is shining on the ocean. Does anyone know why there's salt in the ocean? Yes, Prabhu. It's a preservative, but I also heard Prabhupada on a tape add another reason that there's salt. Yes, it's a preservative. It controls the distillation rate, how fast the water distills. So Krishna's got a whole system just for arranging how the water evaporates, and then it's carried in clouds wherever Krishna wants it and distributed. So I float one bottle of water and people are impressed, but what about the person who's floating unlimited tons of water floating in the sky? So the mystic power of Krishna. Prabhupada gave another example. Milk. What is this? Of course, we know a cow, but what do you, generally speaking, feed a cow? Straw, right? Grass, straw. But not even green grass, straw. Does anyone, you know, we talk about, let me become lower than the straw in the street. A straw is like the most insignificant thing. Now think about it. Young man, can I give you a nice stack of straw? Please chew this, and I'll wait here with a cup. You give me a gallon of milk. Krishna takes the most useless thing. Insignificant. I shouldn't say useless. Everything has a use. Takes the most insignificant thing turns it into the miracle food. Prabhupada says the miracle food for babies and old men, milk. You know? So think about it. I heard Prabhupada, a man was saying, anyway, I don't want to take up too much time, but it is sweet. There was a biologist from a big university, and he was meeting Prabhupada. Generally speaking, Sataputra told me this had happened many times. When Prabhupada would meet a biologist, he'd be introduced, oh, he's a biologist. Prabhupada would say, poor frogs. Because, they do all that dissection, you know. So immediately the guy was a little embarrassed. You know, Prabhupada put him in his position, poor frogs. And the man was saying how we're going to create life, this and that. Prabhupada, a standard thing. Prabhupada said, take a dead man and bring him back to life. Well, we can't do that yet. Prabhupada said, okay, make me a fly. Can you make me a fly? And flies are actually quite complex. They backwards, forwards, up, down. They can take off in all kinds of different directions. Can you make me an airplane that does that? And here's another thing. Make me an airplane, one airplane, another airplane, put them alone in an airplane hangar, and come back some days later and there's baby airplanes. You know, can they generate? No. So they're defeated in so many ways. Man said, no, I can't make you a fly. Prabhupada said, can you make me a blade of grass? He started off, I'm creating life, you know? Then Prabhupada got it down to the point, can you make me a blade of grass? No, we're working on it, you know? Prabhupada said, make me one drop of milk. Can't do it. I had a nice experience. I took one, it's a long story, the short version. We were at a devotee was getting contact lenses. And with contact lenses, this devotee had dry eyes. His eyes were dry. They give you, anyone who wears contacts, I don't, but anyone who does, they give you, what is it? It's artificial tears. You have to buy them. They're expensive. You get them in a bottle. It's some saline solution. And do you know? The doctor told me, he said, actually, we can't duplicate tears. The subtle complexity, the viscosity, the whole thing, we cannot duplicate tears. Something that we take for granted. You've got the best and brightest minds, some IIT graduate, you know, with a degree in chemical engineering, is right now in his laboratory trying to figure out how to make tears. Something insignificant that we take for granted, they can't even duplicate. So Prabhupada's point, turning the philosophy in different ways, Prabhupada's point, the mystic power of God is all around us if we just have the eyes to see. It describes how the python man and a saintly person, generally speaking, they're grave and silent. Prabhupada was sitting, I was in Los Angeles. There was some impersonalist yogi guy, and he had a professor with him. And, you know, the standard thing, I don't know if it's a Buddhist or Sangha, I don't know where it comes from, but you hear it in the West. Those who speak do not know. Those who know do not speak. You ever heard that? They say that an empty drum, you know, an empty bucket or what, it'll make noise. When it's full, it doesn't make noise. One is full of knowledge, he doesn't speak. Say that to Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, very good. Prabhupada said, you believe that a person should follow their philosophy. They have some convictions, they should follow it. Agreed? Otherwise, you're a hypocrite. The man said, oh, yes, I agree. He said, very good. He said, your philosophy is that one who knows doesn't speak. Our Vaishnava philosophy is real speaking begins when you talk about Krishna. So that is a transcendental, like nirguna. But that doesn't mean Krishna doesn't have any qualities. It's the whole positive spectrum. So Prabhupada said, you follow your philosophy, we'll follow our philosophy. You be quiet and all speak. The man was completely fried, you know. But he was quiet. Prabhupada shut him right up, you know. So, and this is also very good. If you have someone who's a little proud and just can't hear what you're saying, I saw Prabhupada do this several times. Prabhupada would say to the person, he said, should I flatter you or should I tell you the truth? Now when someone says that, sir, should I flatter you or should I tell you the truth? What do they say? They say, tell me the truth, which they've just opened the door, you know. I heard one man, he kept going on and on about his, it was here in Bombay, it's a tape. The man's going on and on about his father. Now, you know, we can never repay the father, we can never repay the mother, you know, the person who teaches you even one letter you can never repay. So what to speak of mother and father? So don't misunderstand. But this man, you know, here's a saintly person. Someone who can deliver you from the cycle of birth and death and give you the greatest happiness. And the man is going on and on about his father, my father's business, and my father was this and that in, you know, Mumbai, Bombay. He said he was a sheriff, and he was a, you know, member of Congress. On and on. We have this house because of my father. On and on and on. And Prabhupada was trying to gently interject some Krishna consciousness. The guy wouldn't open up. Prabhupada finally folded his hand and said, "Sir, should I flatter you or tell you the truth?" He said, "Tell me the truth." Prabhupada said, "Do you know where your father is now?" He said, "No." He said, because the man kept saying, "My father built this house, my father's money, we have this house." Prabhupada said, "Your father may be a cockroach in the commode." I mean, it was just, you can listen to the tape, there's silence, you know. But it got through and the man actually focused and got back on the game. So, some Prabhupada stories, that was my duty. We can also think a saintly person speaks out of compassion. There's a picture of Srila Prabhupada. I think it's the one that Prabhupada's in that courtyard in New York, the original 22nd Avenue. There's a bird stand next to him. Mukunda Marsh told me this. Mukunda Marsh, they took the photo. They said, "Prabhupada, you look so serious." Prabhupada said, "I was in ecstasy." So a saintly person is not frivolous. He's not just like a dancing dog, laughing, chattering, you know. But out of deep compassion, he speaks. And it's worthwhile, as I'm sure you all do, to meditate on Prabhupada's deep compassion. I don't know, anyone who's been to New York City, you can Google it, you can look at the pictures. Hey, how long do we go to? 9 o'clock? What do we go to? Before 9. So, when you sail into New York Harbor, it's impressive. I don't know whether it's the Hudson River or the East River, but you sail into the harbor, the Statue of Liberty is there. Give me your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. What freedom? They're completely controlled by their senses. That's another thing. But, you know, the Statue of Liberty is there, the big skyscraper buildings. It's impressive. It's meant to be impressive. Gateway to America. Prabhupada's first analysis of New York City, he was not impressed. He said the whole place smells like dog stool. He was not impressed by, you know, he didn't come to see the sights or something. And it was very hard for Prabhupada. I mean, you all know the stories. So, but why did he speak? Out of deep compassion. Let's see, what was I going to say? Oh, here's the kind of audience Prabhupada was speaking to. When I first came to the temple, first time I came to the temple, because you know, Prabhupada, he can speak on the highest level of the deep subtleties of Krishna Bhakti, of Vrindavan Ras. And yet here he is, in front of these madmen and mad women, and explaining, you know, you're not this body, you're spirit soul, there actually is God, he has a form, you have a relation, the most basic things Prabhupada speaking. So to give you a sample of the audience, first time I came to the temple, I came late, someone was giving the Sunday feast talk, I didn't quite catch what he was talking about. But I remember that he'd said you should surrender everything to Krishna. I was 16 and a half, 17 years old, whatever I was. Okay, fine. This may be, you know, the temple room. They go to RT, and there was a group of hippies next to me, men and women. They all started taking their clothes off. I said, "Wait a minute. Where's the door? I didn't come for that, you know." So then I found out later I was the temple president. This devotee came over and said, "Hey, come on, you know, put your clothes back on." So I asked him later on, I said, "You know, is that a regular event? You take your clothes off, put your clothes back?" He said, "No, no, no. The speaker said surrender everything." So they were thinking, "Oh, we're surrendering everything." So you could just, Malati Mataji said that I think was at her initiation or something like that. At the end of the initiation, Prabhupada, you know, the fire is there, and Prabhupada said, "Bow down." So, you know, in coming from wherever we were, Prabhupada's sweet Bengali accent, they thought Prabhupada said, "Blow down." So they got on all fours and they began blowing on the fire. And she says she looked up and she called it the saucer eyes. Prabhupada, you know, you've seen this picture of Prabhupada with those big eyes, like, "Huh? All right, this is what you've sent me, Krishna. I'll do the best I can," you know. So we should remember that great, I don't know about you, you've all taken birth to serve Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan mission. You're all exalted souls in your previous life. But I know that I'm a dog, that some saintly Vaishnav threw a japati, you know, Mahaprasadam, and here I am by Krishna's grace. So we should remember that great, that's what stimulates us. That's what motivates us, is great compassion. Our problems are solved. You can make a list. It's like they, what do they call it, cycle and recycle, you know, you sort things out. So human intelligence is meant to sort things out. Sat and asat. That's being a human being. Atato brahma jigyasya. Just being human. What is eternal? What is temporary? Chanakya Pandit says, you should never give up the permanent for the temporary. Why? You'll lose both. The permanent, the temporary is going to, you've given up that which is permanent for that which is temporary. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, constantly mutable, you're going to lose it anyway. So never give up the permanent for the temporary. So understanding this, saintly person speak. Let's see. And Prabhupada's tolerance, because with compassion comes tolerance. Anyone who has children, children do so many crazy things. They should be born with crash helmets. I mean, it's inconceivable what children do. So in the same way, one has to be compassionate, one has to be tolerant. You can hear the tape, Prabhupada speaking in France, in Paris. And it's during the student riots, they're all communists, this, that, you know, everyone's equal, and, you know, justice, everything belongs to the people. Of course, the people belong to Krishna, they don't make that connection, but... So Prabhupada's talking about how to organize society. And he's saying there's first class, second class, third class, fourth class. He's explaining the different varnas of a civilized society. And right in the middle of the lecture, you hear someone stand up and they're shouting at Prabhupada, just shouting. "And I suppose you think you're first class. You're sitting on that big seat." Prabhupada said, "Do you want to come sit here?" You know, Prabhupada, you know, that kind of calmed him down. But then he got back into it, and some other students, "You say you're first class. You say you're first class." And you hear on the tape Prabhupada say, with such gravity, it's quiet, but it's profound. Prabhupada says, "No." That he says very firmly. "You say you're first class." Prabhupada says, "No." He said, "I am fifth class. I am a servant of all the other classes." And the guy just shuts up, and the whole auditorium bursts into applause. So that gravity and that compassion and that tolerance, we can see that in saintly persons. We can certainly see it in Prabhupada. Questions and answers, because this is talking about questions and answers. They should be the right type of questions and the right types of answers. Bhagavatam says, everywhere you find, you know, hearing and chanting. Where is worm? Where is worm? Where is money? Where is money? The bird is chirping, you know, where to find some bug, some worm, some fruit. The man is looking at the Wall Street Journal, you know, buy, sell, buy, sell. But it's the same impetus. It's the same mode. One of our gurus, one of our Diksha gurus, he had a letter. This is in Mayapur. He said, you know, I was a household at the time. He said, "Badri, come on over here." He said, "Read this letter. Tell me how I should answer. What do you think?" And the letter began. It was from one of his disciples. "Oh, you're the lotus of my light. You're brighter than the sun and the moon." You know, all the sweet words, all the praise, this, that. Then the devotee got down to the real business. "I know you told me not to do this, but I'm going to do that. I know you said stay here, but I'm going there. I know you said don't do this, but I'm doing that. Please give me your blessings. So that our ISKCON guru, Diksha guru, said, how do I answer this? If I give my blessings, what he's doing is completely foolish. He's going to go right off a cliff. If I tell him no, he'll do it anyway, and that's Guru Aparat. How do I deal? What do I do with this, you know? So this point is, what kind of questions are we asking? And it also shouldn't be, you know, who, what is the name of the wife of the fifth Manu and the, you know, no. I mean, they're fine, it's worth knowing, you know. But we should ask questions. Here it talks about self-purification. That the goal of life is self-purification. Prabhupada was in Japan. Dainippon Press. Some other time, Tomal Krishnamurti told me the story of how Prabhupada got the most amazing deal possible. And he actually told Tomal, you go in and ask this price. Dainippon had offered this price. High price. Prabhupada told Tomal Krishna Maharaj, you go in and offer this incredibly low price. Tomal said, they'll never take it. Prabhupada said, just trust me. So they offered their price. Tomal Krishna Maharaj, one of the heroes of our society, so many things, went in and offered this super low price. They were flabbergasted. They were sputtering. They were like, it does not compute, does not compute, you know? And then Prabhupada stepped in as the middleman. And he chastised Tomal. No. You should not. This is too much. This price is too low. You shouldn't have done that. And Prabhupada said, what if we choose a price in the middle? They were so relieved that at least they weren't arguing Tomal Krishnamurti's price. They took this other price, which was much lower than their intended. And that's how they settled the thing, you know? So, you know, Prabhupada said, I'm an old Calcutta boy. You know, he probably was no dummy. You know, a super trend. In every field, Prabhupada was expert. But the point I wanted to make is why the executives went out to process Prabhupada's low offer. They left a young exec there to just, you know, do they want any water? Do you need anything, you know? So Prabhupada, I saw this so many times, Prabhupada would reach into people's hearts, newspaper reporters, parents. It wasn't just a, you know, formality that the reporters come, they ask their questions and they walk away. Prabhupada would get into their heart. Anyway, there's so many stories. Prabhupada would make people cry. If someone had finally listened to them, so they could actually open up. I saw it many, many times. So Prabhupada started talking to this Dainippon young executive, and he didn't speak much English. And Prabhupada asked him, what is your goal in life? And the man couldn't quite express himself. They were around a big conference table. He went around and collected all the other senior businessmen executives' cards. So he took all of his seniors and stacked them all in a stack, the business cards. Then he ceremoniously took his card out and put it on top. You follow? He wanted to climb to the top of the corporation. He wanted to be the topmost headman. That was his goal. So everyone has some goal like that. Here it's talking about self-purification. That's the goal of life? It's a revolutionary concept. The fact of the matter is, Krishna describes different levels of faith in Bhagavad Gita. I want to get to pramana, because it talks about shruti pramana here. So I want to get there, but just give me a little of your patience. Ramapad Maharaj mentioned very respectfully and with affection Jiva Goswami. We are not blind followers. We are not sentimentalists. But faith is there in everyone. The presentation is, you know, you sentimental Hare Krishnas, you believe in magical thinking, you believe in things, you know, that, you know, so many things. A blue boy, and, you know, from his navel came, you know, lotus, and come on. You know, it's for old ladies and people afraid of death, and your grandmother used to believe it. And they say about everything. It doesn't matter what, any faith tradition that talks about transcendence, this is what they say. However, I'm a realist. I'm standing on solid ground. I know what I can measure, what I can cut, what I can taste, what I can duplicate. That's what I know. I just thought of this, but is it a sidelight? How long does it take to get a PhD? How long does it... 4 years in undergrad, right? In college. How long is a master's degree? 2 years? Yeah, 2 years. So now we've invested 6 years, right? To get a PhD, 2 years minimum. Generally speaking. It's a fair number, right? So if you invest 8 years, you get a PhD, which Prabhupada called piled higher and deeper. We call permanent head damage or prominent humility disorder. So anyway, 8 years invested, and you have to slave. You have to work really hard. And you have to become a completely sold-out servant to whoever your professor is. You do all this research. He takes all the credit. You have to surrender to him. If you come up with a different concept and argue with him, you're out. Invest 8 years to a professor, become his sold-out servant, you get a piled higher and deeper permanent head damage. Give us 8 years. Surrender to the process. Live in the temple for 8 years, come to the morning program, chant japa nicely, follow the four regular principles, you'll be completely transformed. So there was devotees, I forget what the country was, maybe it was South Africa, I forget what it was, because there was apartheid government, restrictive government. It also happened in Kenya, I think. Restrictive government. They didn't know about these different, any international organization with links to other outside bodies. They wanted to make sure they weren't agitating against the government or some political something. South Africa, two government agents were given the assignment secretly infiltrate the Hare Krishna Society. Find out what they're up to. They stayed for 6 months, shaved up, brahmacharis, followed the whole morning program. 6 months came time to report back. Reported back, no, they're very good people. And by the way, we're resigning from government service and we're moving in. They became devotees, you know? So, but the point I was making, thank you, but we don't have time. The point I was making is that if you do the lab study, if you follow it, what they speak of 8 years, 6 months, they shave up, move in, Hare Krishna. So, there is a phenomenology that if you follow it, you get the result. But without even going to that point, they say we only believe what we can measure. Now, let me ask you a simple example. I mean, Prabhupada says it. Anyone know what's happening on the other side of this wall? Anyone know? Anyway, I was sitting in it was a college class. We were speaking. The professor was, you know, and there were 45, 50 students. The professor was trying to make the point that everything has to be subjected to our senses and then our intellect, breaking it down into component parts and our analysis. Ultimately, what he's saying is that human intellect, everything is subordinate to human intellect. That's the point. Why? Why is man the measure of all things, as they say in Western philosophy? Why? Christopher Columbus' aunt goes exploring. Okay? He's sent out by the queen. And he's crawling. I'm droning on this, that. You're all very patient. Christopher Columbus climbing up. And he reports back to the queen. Great vistas, mountains, forests. Remember, he's climbing on me. And his report is, but they're all uninhabited. He has no idea. With his little narrow range of perspective, he has no idea that I'm here. We think, okay, we understand ants. Most dogs only raise their head about 45 degrees. You never see a dog looking straight up. You don't see it. They don't even have the anatomy for it. So if something a dog can't see, it doesn't exist. But we understand, well, we're higher than an ant, we're higher than a dog, we're higher than the Aborigines, Adivasis. But, you know, if I graduate from IIT with a PhD, I'm the top of the intellect. Why? There's devas, there's so many things beyond our sense perception. I'll give you an example. This is one of the beginning principles Prabhupada was making. Suppose before I sat down here, there is some insidious, seditious rascal amongst us who pours glue on this seat, and I'm glued to this seat. Wait, what the, you know? So suppose I'm glued to this seat. I am finite. I am fixed. I want to shake hands with you. Don't do it yet. I want to shake hands with this young man. Maybe he's got a glove jam in his pocket. I want to get it, you know? I'm highly motivated. I can lean. I can stretch. Can I, glued to this seat, can I reach his pocket? No? Do we have no advocates? I'm a yes advocate. You know how? I'm finite. But can I shake your hand. How? He takes the initiative. He comes to me. It becomes a very easy thing, isn't it? So the fact of the matter is that we are in a very limited scope. And we should accept that we're finite. Anyone who doesn't accept they're finite is the greatest fool. Probably just to say, fool number one, fool number two, you know? Fool number one is the one who says something foolish, and fool number two is the one who believes it. So the world is operating, fool number one, fool number two. I'm finite. Anyone who does, given we're finite. But it's revelatory. The point is that higher truth is revelatory. It has to be revealed. The absolute has to take the initiative. Prabhupada used to say, quoting his Guru Maharaj, don't try to force your way to God. Act in such a way that God comes to you. So Shruti Praman, we'll see how much time you've got. Jiva Goswami, Shruti Praman. It is profound. It begins with Western modern philosophy begins with Descartes, and it says, I think, therefore I am. They're asking the question, how do I know what I know? Let me say this first. Has anyone here seen the Eiffel Tower? Anyone here seen the Eiffel Tower? Raise your hand if you've seen the Eiffel Tower. Our sannyasis are traveling hither and thither, so they've seen the Eiffel Tower. Now, that, I think there were like 5, 6 out of however many you're gathered here. Let's say 100, just to make an easy number. So 95% of you have never seen the Eiffel Tower. Do we have any Eiffel Tower doubters here? It's all a conspiracy. Hey, it's Photoshop. It's all designed by the French government to get you to come to Paris and spend your money. You haven't seen the Eiffel Tower? Why do you believe in the Eiffel Tower? Hey, just because you Google it, remember, it could be Photoshop. Could be conspiracy. You have someone you trust who has been there. Someone you know. I've seen the Eiffel Tower. It's shaped like... So the point is, we have taken that the Eiffel Tower exists on faith. We have a man, a professor, who comes to our temple in San Diego. His field is education. And it's how do people learn, how do people know what they know. All of us, each of us, rattling around in our head... Krishna talks about divisions of faith in Bhagavad Gita, divisions of determination, all those, according to the modes of nature. All those things add together and they create a picture of the world. Each of us has a measure. What's success? We had a lady come to our temple in Los Angeles. Saturday, a lot of guests coming, going, the flow of things. I knew her. They're nice people. So I went and got them a nice plate of prasadam. I wrapped up, gave her the prasadam. So she put it on the ledge in the back of the temple and said, I just want to go for darshan of the deities. So she started to walk. I said, Mataji, you might want to keep an eye on that. You're leaving your prasadam back here. You're walking all the way up here. Dozens of people are coming and going. I said, you might want to keep an eye on it. And she laughed. She said, you're right. She said, my daughter came for Janmashtami. She was dancing, some Bharatanatyam something. She had diamond earrings. One of the earrings fell on the floor. Nobody could find it. Next morning, devotees are cleaning up, found the diamond, immediately returned it. She was narrating to me. She said, my husband came before all the phone stuff. They had like a $3,000 video camera. They left it. Another time, Diwali, they came. They left it. Nobody could find it. Next day, devotees are cleaning up, they found it, they returned it. So diamond they returned, $3,000 camera they returned. She said, but twice I've had my Mahaprasadam stolen. I said, we just have a different set of priorities, So everybody in their head has a picture. What is valuable? What is success? What is good? We've all got pictures in our head. And that picture in your head, which creates your universe and how you interrelate with it, 90% of that information is based on faith. I'm sorry, Mr. Scientist. Anybody here seen a quark? Oh, there goes one. Oh, there goes a proton. Anyone seen it? Anybody seen it? But we have a whole picture of mechanistic quantum physics, how the whole thing works. It's all based on faith. 95, you may have a few people. If we have time, remind me to tell Prabhupada's joke. I personally heard him tell it about the limits of knowledge. But the point I'm trying to make, back to Jiva Goswami, the fact of the matter is, what do we know? So Western philosophy says, well, let's let's go back and this is based on faith, this is based on supposition, this is based on what people say or, you know, whatever. Let's go back to that core thing, 1980, 1980, 1980. You know, let's go back to that core thing that we know. I know that I exist, right? I'm here. You know, Christian talks about the city of nine gates. I have an internal, and I see an external. So let's say, if we're building a building, what's our initial foundation? At least I know I exist, right? Tat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami begins that there's the seer, the seen, and the act of seeing. Seer, seen, act of seeing. And we build from there. What do we know? What do we base it? Then he offers all different types of pramanas. There's the pramana of sense perception, which he completely shreds. There's the perception, the pramana of accumulated knowledge of humankind. He shreds that. Ultimately, he comes down to the same point, finite, infinite, it's revelatory. He comes down to the point of shruti. You have to hear. From the transcendent is revelatory. It depends on shruti. Then he goes through all the different types of shruti, all the different types of Vedas. He comes to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Srimad Bhagavatam concludes, or the core protam otam is Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. So the fact that we believe what we believe, it is not sentiment, it is not emotion, it is based on right questions and right answers as explained here. So, we have, by my calculation, 4 minutes more. I guess I'll say this. I'll tell a joke, because I promised I would. Prabhupada said this, and I guess I'll sum it up in this way, and then I'll tell the joke. Prabhupada said that Bhagavad Gita is spoken, Arjuna takes the role of us as every man. Even though, you know, he's Krishna's pure devotee, still he's asking, you know the Bhagavad Gita storyline, or, you know, the thread. Prabhupada said Arjuna took that role, was put in that position, because Prabhupada said, it's not that we don't know the right answers. We don't even know the right questions. We don't even know what to ask. So Arjuna takes the role, asks the right questions, and Krishna gives the right answers. So human form of life means we've got to ask the right questions. It's not hearing and chanting like the birds, and the, you know, in the Bhagavatam, where is worm, or the businessman looking at the Wall Street Journal. Those are not how to fill my belly, eat, sleep, mate, and defend. That is not human form of life. We've got to ask the right questions. And here it says, what is the right question? What is self-purification? Let me hear from a saintly person. How have you obtained that state? You have to ask the right questions. And you have to ask from the right person. So you ask the right questions, the right person, the right answers, and lo and behold, you get the right goal. Prabhupada said, if you eat off a diseased person, what is that right goal? What is the value of Shruti Praman? What is the fruit of the whole thing? If you eat off, I heard Prabhupada say this, if you eat off a diseased person's plate, what happens? Someone has a disease, you eat off their plate. What happens? You catch their disease, isn't it? Okay, now we're taking prasadam. What is prasadam? It's been offered to Krishna. We're eating off Krishna's plate. You follow the comparison? Now, every disease has symptoms, isn't it? Headache, indigestion, whatever, fever, whatever it be. You eat off a diseased person's plate, you get a disease, and every disease has symptoms. So Prabhupada said, we're eating off Krishna's plate, we get Krishna's disease. And what are the symptoms, Prabhupada said, of Krishna's disease? Sat Chit Ananda. And Prabhupada said, and if you catch this disease, there is no cure. So right questions, right answers, from the right person, with the right goal, and you get the right result. Pure devotional service, Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. The joke, and we'll finish. We're taught, there is a place, I'm going to understand everything by my senses. Biggest and best and brightest minds. I'm going to understand everything. You're believing on faith. We're standing on the solid bank of knowledge. There is a place, I don't know if we have any Aussies here, It's called Park Observatory. It's one of the best, you know, telescopes for seeing out into the edge of the universe. In fact, when NASA does all of its business and the you know American Space Shuttle thing, Space Administration, when things are on the southern hemisphere, they use this Park telescope. You can Google it. It's with an E. Nine? Well, I keep going. So they have been printing articles in top journals, Scientific America, National Geographic. They have been reporting on a red star or a dwarf star that's the collapsing of a universe, and they've you know peer reviewed, you know, MIT, Caltech, they're all signing off in this Park Observatory. They've discovered the outer edges of the universe. On top of it, they've heard the cosmic echo, the reverberation of the Big Bang, proving that everything came from nothing, that existence is the original free lunch. It all came from nothing. And they've recorded the residual echo, which proves it. 17 years, peer-reviewed, top Scientific American, it's accepted. You know what they found out it was? What they were recording? It was a glitch in the microwave oven in the staff kitchen. When they would turn it on, if you too soon shut it off, you know, you set it for 3 minutes, but you decide you want it in 2 minutes, ding, and you open the door. If before you went the full time that you set it, ding, and you opened the door, it set out a bolt. That's what they were recording. Whoops. So what do they know? It's just a big bluff. Prabhupada's like a big chapati full of hot air. And our duty as Vaishnavas is to poke a hole and let all that hot air out so the people are not exploited. Prabhupada's joke. And we'll finish, I promise. A man is riding on a train. In India, they used to have coal-burning trains. They still have, maybe in Bihar, do they still have, do they have any coal burning train? Anyway, they used to run on coal. If you were a householder and you wore white at the end of the thing, if you went a long route, you say you went from whatever, from Calcutta to Madras or Chennai, or you know, from Calcutta to Mumbai, your clothes were gray. You know, you wash them, the rinse water would come out black. From the soot coming out from the chimney, from the, like a locomotion. So, this is Prabhupada's joke. A man's riding on a train with his friend. He opens the window for some fresh air. Oh! He gets a cinder in his eye from the smoke, from the coal-burning train. And anyone, if you get something in your eye, it's very painful, right? So the man sees suffering like anything. His friend goes to find a doctor. He's looking for a doctor. What to do? And he goes through all the different compartments. Can't find a doctor. Finally, the last compartment. It's a whole compartment load of doctors going to a medical convention. Fantastic. Not quite. This one's a cardiologist. This one's a podiatrist. This one, you know, this one's a foot doctor. This one's, you know, whatever. Finally, he finds an ophthalmologist, an eye doctor. At last. He brings the eye doctor up. The doctor looks at the poor man with a cinder in his eye and said, "It's in the left eye. I'm a right eye specialist." That's Prabhupada's joke, you know? So Prabhupada told Sataputta, they know more and more about less and less. They can only measure what's nearby and of medium size. The smaller they go into quantum mechanics, the weirder it gets. They take their Park, you know, observatory, the farther they go out in the cosmos, they don't know what's happening. They're listening to the microwave oven in the staff kitchen. So they can only understand things of medium size and nearby. So should we build our lives, should this be the basis of pramana? Should this be the basis of our worldview? 95% of it we've taken on faith. Or do we, reading Tatsandarbha, confirming at every point that the best pramana, the best evidence is Shruti Praman, should we base our life and goal and happiness on Shruti Praman? Right questions, right answers, right goal, back home, back to Godhead. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna. And because we have a GBC meeting, we got to go. Thank you. thing. I tell you how I can accept this His Holiness. I was ever since I took sannyas, I was very embarrassed when they would say His Holiness, because I know the nature of my... But then I thought, I'm full of holes, like a narcissist. So yes, I fully accept His Holiness, but in writing, in this context. Thank you.